You're listening to Personal Sharing on the 12 Steps of Codependence Anonymous. This CD's audio content is produced by Codependence Anonymous Incorporated and is copyright Codependence Anonymous Incorporated and its licensors, all rights reserved. None of the audio content herein may be reproduced in any form. More information is available about CODA on the web at www.coda.org.
My name is Curly and I am codependent. I had always suspected at various times in my life through many, many failed relationships that I really had no power over these other people that I was in relationship with. But one thing, the primary thing that I kept doing was trying to control this other person, whether it was a female that was in my life or whether it was a male in my life, or even my mom and dad, trying to control these people to do exactly what I wanted them to do. What I experienced, if these people would not do what I wanted them to do, I would have all these, I guess you'd call them feelings, that would start in me. And what I've learned throughout my recovery, these feelings that started in me, was abandonment. The roots of codependency for me, and I believe for most of us, if not all of us, was from childhood abuse. I never had anybody there for me, hence I didn't know what it felt like to have somebody there for me, and I certainly didn't know what it was like to be there for somebody else. The unmanageability, one of the aspects of my unmanageability in my life came for the years and years I spent in obsession over another person, the terror that I experienced around that person not being with me, or the terror I experienced within that relationship whenever I would perceive that person leaving. The main focal of my personal abuse was emotional abuse. And because of this emotional abuse, a phenomenon and a feeling started developing in me, and the feeling was shame, that I secretly thought, no matter what I was telling anybody or no matter how I was acting, that I was really less than, worthless, dumb, stupid, inadequate, embarrassed. And because of that feeling, you know, I was just never had a, was able to form a true partnership with another human being. I was always afraid that in any given moment somebody would find out, the person that I was connected with, or male friends or female friends once again, and they would find out who I really was, and I had a basic core belief about myself that I was at all times less than other people. So I do believe today that I absolutely have no power over any other human being, whether that be male or female. And I came to realize that because of the codependency and because of the setup in my childhood, that my life truly had become unmanageable.
My name is Jim and I'm a codependent. The first step for me really was extremely difficult. It's still something that I deal with on an ongoing basis, recognizing powerlessness and unmanageability in my life. The more I look into my history and the more clearly I see my life on a day-to-day basis, the more I understand and discover areas of powerlessness that I really didn't recognize before. For me, the first step is about letting go of control. One of the things that really what characterized my relationship with people virtually from the start was fear. I had no idea how to deal with people. I literally went about the process of constructing a personality, a facade, if you will, that I could put out in front of people, and through that facade I would try to control their reality. If they needed me to be funny, I was funny. If they needed to be me to be sensitive and caring, I could do that as well. Angry, stupid, whatever the situation called for and whatever I felt the people wanted, the people in my life, that's what I became. It was extremely difficult. It took a lot of energy, and I mean, I isolated a lot simply because it required so much energy. I'd spend time literally from as far back as I can remember. I was addicted to television, reading books, whatever it took to escape and not feel the feelings that I had going on, especially fear. What was involved in my history was a lot of abandonment. Both of my parents were alcoholic. And by the time I was 13, they were both dead. They had died of their disease. Up until that time, they were very, very sick, spending time in hospitals or bars. So there really was no one there to teach me how it is that I do this thing called life. There was no one that I could look at and get some sort of instruction or a role model, if you will. I literally had to figure it out on my own. Consequently, I got a lot of things wrong. I was very confused about a lot of issues. What happened with me was that with there being no one there, with there being no one paying attention to me, and the attention that I usually did get was very abusive. There was a lot of screaming, some physical abuse, sexual abuse. What happened with me was I, as a child, I could not look at these people called adults and say, you know, this is about them. It's not about me. I'm a special human being. Obviously, I couldn't make that kind of connection as a child, so I figured it was about me. It was all my fault. All the insanity that reigned in my house was about me. I made it about me. Well, looking back on it, obviously the insanity that was going on in my house wasn't really about me, but I couldn't see any differently. I made it about me, and I did everything I could think of to be worthy of time and attention and direction on the part of my parents and my brothers and other adults in my life. It never was good enough. What was born inside of me was a sense of shame, a feeling that there was something terribly wrong with me. Obviously there was, otherwise all these people would pay attention to me. I felt very bad about myself. I remember very clearly sitting on my bicycle talking to a couple of friends when I was 10 years old, and we were talking about what we thought of ourselves and of our world, that sort of thing, and my friends were talking, saying things like they thought they were pretty good people, and a feeling rose up in me, and all that could come out of my mouth was, I hate myself. I can't stand myself. I wish I were dead at times. What grew out of that was obviously a lot of insanity in my life. As I grew older, addictions became common, and that, again, grew out of my codependency. More and more powerlessness occurred in terms of dealing with people and in terms of dealing literally with every aspect of my life I could not deal with. I was looking for fixes, whether it was alcohol, whether it was a relationship, sex, television, books. It didn't make any difference. I just didn't want to feel anything. I wanted to have other things out there fix me. Over a period of time, my life became even more and more unmanageable. It became a virtual hell. My recovery started with recovery from my addictions, and at some point in time I discovered this issue called codependency, which I believe really lies at the root of my recovery. Recovery from codependency means recovery from these other addictions as well. The recovery process today for me in regards to the first step is, again, recognizing that I am powerless over all people, places, and things in my life. That as I try to exert my own will in those situations and make things go my way, my life becomes more and more unmanageable.
My name is Annie. I am a codependent. The first step was real hard for me to get in touch with. I was in recovery for quite a while before I really understood what it meant. As a child, I did not have a real safe feeling, and I grew with that to distrust people immensely. And what I found that I did was that if I made my reality the way I thought it should be by controlling people, then I had this illusion that I felt safe. What I have found out is that that's not true. My childhood started out with two parents that taught me that there would be no one there for me. And I am an only child, so I had a lot of issues and no one to talk with. The messages I was told was that I was not any good, never was, never would be. That kind of went along with the fact that I didn't feel real safe, so I tried to put this little box around me. But living in the world, I couldn't stay alienated from people. And when I was out in that other world, it was real difficult for me at times. I chose to use a lot of addictions in my life to ease that pain. It was the only way that I could go out and be social with other people. When I got into recovery and didn't have my addictions anymore, I got into a lot of paranoia over that. It was a couple of years into sobriety where one day I woke up and I was feeling real paranoid, and I didn't know what was happening. And what ended up becoming a truth was that I had issues called codependency issues that needed to be dealt with. And I had to go back in and find out what did happen to me so that I could change the tapes that go on in my head. You know, it all began with my mom, and she was the one that taught me to be controlling. My household is run that way, and they still do it that way. I don't choose to do it today. Today I choose to rewind the tapes in a different way and live in a different atmosphere than what I grew up in. My life is not managed by me. I choose to believe that God manages, and He does a much better job. It's amazing to walk around in the world still feeling unsafe at times, because that's an issue I deal with on a daily basis, but watching that the universe really does take care of me. I'm finding that the less I try to control it, the better off I am. Things just seem to flow real easy.
My name's Curly, and I'm codependent. You know, it took me a long time in my recovery before I could understand really how I was set up for this disease of codependency. And what I understood and what I had to start understanding is I was set up for this disease by abuse. And you know, it was real hard for me in some areas to start identifying what that abuse was. What I've come to understand is that my abuse was mainly emotional. I had sexual abuse. I was abused spiritually, physically. I was abused socially, and I was also abused religiously. I know for a while in the beginning of my recovery, the thing that I did was I blamed mom and dad for everything that happened to me. What I can see now is that mom and dad at all times were doing for me the best that they were capable of doing. I have a belief, once again personal, that all parents are at best inadequate because of this disease. I don't blame them. I don't hold them responsible. But what I do is I hold them accountable so I don't bring this dysfunction into my own family. I was sober in AA between 6 and 7 years, and there was still something going on inside of me that I didn't understand. Even though I would smile and pat people on the back and shake people in the hand, there was always something else going on that I couldn't quite touch. There was something very powerful going on inside of me. What I have come to learn is that there was another disease that I believe my alcoholism and drug addiction was defending, and that was my codependency. My codependency, even in my sobriety, was affecting my family, mainly my family. My work situation, all my social situations, was always that thing that was hidden inside of me, that thing for many years that I didn't have a word for, and I didn't believe there was a language. I didn't believe there had been a word yet in the English language to describe that thing that was going on inside of me. What I saw that I was doing, though, was getting my worth from others. I was trying to get others to accept me, and I've heard it said that as this was going on, what we're doing is we're walking around and it feels like there's a hole in our soul. I'm really grateful for the first step of this program, and I do agree with Jim that it's something that I have to work every day of my life, that I am truly, in fact, powerless over other people, places, things, situations. What I do is I identify my abuse and I see how I'm acting out that abuse in my adulthood, and I just want to thank you.
My name is Jim, and I'm codependent. Curly mentioned a couple of things that I wanted to comment on. Number one was the importance of getting my history straight in the beginning, understanding what happened to me. I was frankly deluded about my own childhood, and I find it's very true today with people who have not worked through issues and are not involved in something like Codependence Anonymous, that you'll ask them how their childhood was, and they'll say, well, it was fine, standard. And that's exactly what I said in the beginning, was my childhood was fine, nothing wrong with it, standard run-of-the-mill family, when in fact there was massive abuse and abandonment, and some real tragedies going on in my life that all affected me. Again, it's not about looking back on that situation and pointing the finger at my mother and father and said, why didn't you do a better job? It's simply a matter of understanding this person today that's called Jim, being able to look at my history and see how it all pieced together to form what became the person that came into Codependence Anonymous for recovery. What was very difficult and still continues to be difficult for me to deal with was, in my family, feelings weren't allowed. About the only feeling that was allowed was anger, more like rage is more appropriate. I didn't have any idea how to deal with the sadness in my life, or the loneliness, or the pain, or the fear, certainly. I had no idea how to deal with any of those feelings. One of the things that the first step teaches me is that there are very powerful feelings going on inside of me every day, and that I need to talk those out. That I cannot control people, I cannot control situations to make me feel better. That simply doesn't work. I need to talk them out, I need to pray about them, as opposed to acting them out in one of my diseases.
My name is Annie. I am a codependent. You know, I'm sitting here and we're laughing that what I'm really feeling at this moment is a lot of shame. I can't get centered and just kind of relax with this whole thing. My perfectionism is telling me I have to do this perfect, you know, and that's not true. I can do it any way that needs to be done. I'm not in charge of this, and that's one of the things it tells me. You know, I am powerless over this whole thing. My insides, my head, my ego is still trying to control this whole thing. It's not happening real comfortable for me. I'm real uncomfortable sitting here, and I need to express how I feel. When Jim was talking, that's what I realized is that as a child, I never was allowed to express any feelings, even especially rage or anger. You know, girls did not get angry. You used to stuff that feeling way down deep inside. So what happens with my anger is it builds up into a whole lot of other things. I don't do insecurity real well. Insecurity is really a hard one, and that's what I'm feeling right now, is real insecure. I don't need to. Today, my recovery shows me that I can talk about my feelings and express exactly how I'm feeling, no matter how stupid it may sound to somebody else, and that it's okay for me to be Annie. That's a real special place to be. I, too, as the guys were talking, do not blame my parents for what happened. But until I went in and found out what did happen to me, and feel it, not only understand it intellectually, because, oh, I had it all up in my head, and it was there, and, oh, I could tell you exactly what happened. But till I really got to Codependence Anonymous, that's when I felt it all. And when I felt it, it was not real pleasant at times, but that's what allowed me to become me, was to really have my own set of feelings, and to finally realize that I don't have to react to those feelings. Just because situations are happening and people are not doing what I think they should do, etc., or so forth, I just don't have to react to them. I can stay centered, and just my favorite saying is, okay, God, we kind of walk together with the issues, especially the ones that make me feel insecure, like right at this moment.
I spent a long time, number one, spending a long time denying that I was insane. I had a unique ability to always blame it on the other people, meaning I'm feeling this way because of this relationship, or I'm feeling this way because this person did this to me, or what have you. It was a long time before I could identify my insanity. When I started looking back over my life, and I started seeing the relationships that had failed, and I can remember the first relationship I had was in sixth grade, and her name was Barbara B., and when that relationship broke up because of the beginning of the school year, I had a set of feelings, or this thing happened to me that was very, very powerful. And that's back in the sixth grade that happened to me. I went through life, and as of today, I can identify 9 major relationships. And each time a relationship ended in my life, more powerful and more powerful and more powerful was this set of feelings, and that was the only thing I knew what to call it at that time. It was abandonment. Once again, after the end of every relationship, I was left a lost, alone, nobody there for me. I didn't know how to talk about it because I felt so much shame that, you know, of course I didn't want to go up to anybody and say how sick I was and how I was feeling because this person had left me. I tried to deal with it in my own way, and I tried to read books about it, and usually what happened, it was just a long period of time before I got over that relationship. And the way, in hindsight, I got over every relationship was I got in another relationship. I never really grieved any of those relationships. The only way I guess I can talk to you guys about what I felt like at the end of those relationships was terror, absolute terror. I didn't feel connected to the universe. I certainly didn't feel connected to you. I was this little boy that needed an immediate fix in my life, and the fix never came until once again I found another woman and started a relationship with that woman, and then eventually that relationship would end. When I started looking at that, I started understanding that it was truly insane behavior. The idea of God was presented to me, that I needed a relationship with God. First, I needed a relationship with myself and with God. And I came to believe at some level that God could restore me to sanity, that God could, in His way and His time, show me how to have a relationship, because I certainly didn't know how to have one. Even though, you know, I could talk about relationships and I could probably tell you what to do in relationships, what I never understood is what I was doing in relationships. When I got tired of the pain, when I got tired of the fear, and I started letting God, however smallly, come into my life, and He started showing me how to have relationships. Since that I've truly taken this second step, now I'm not going to tell you that I haven't had pain and that I haven't had trouble in relationships, but there was a focal I could go on now, that I knew and believed with every fiber of my being that God could and would restore me to sanity. I don't choose relationships today. They're going to lead me into that insane behavior and that insane thinking that I used to have. And God has made that possible through me, for me, and through me in the Fellowship of Codependence Anonymous.
My name is Jim and I'm codependent. When I first came to the second step, it frankly scared me to death. The reason is because I had been brought to the point for the first time in my life of seeking help outside of myself, looking for some sort of an answer besides what I could find in books or think up in my own frankly diseased mind. And I came to this place called Codependence Anonymous and saw these 12 steps, and within the first several days, several weeks, it became clear to me that these 12 steps were in fact the recovery program. I at first thought that the 12 steps were for real bad codependents. I have since discovered otherwise. When it came to that second step, it really scared me, because up to that point I had for a number of years been agnostic, neatly avoided the issue of God altogether. Frankly, I didn't have time to think about it. I was too busy trying to survive. What my life had been about up to that point, as I talked about earlier, was trying to control my own life, my own situation, and the people around me so that I could feel comfortable with me. But I never was comfortable with me. I was constantly not good enough. I was looking to change different areas of my life and do things differently and not do things that I didn't think I should be doing. What I was really trying to do constantly was turn over a new leaf. I'd wake up every morning and today was going to be the day that I'd turn over a new leaf. I'd somehow reach down inside of myself and flip a switch and be a different person today. I did that thousands of times. Thousands and thousands of times, trying to be someone that I wasn't. What it basically boiled down to is that I didn't have the power. That was not possible for me. Today it's still difficult for me to accept that I can't wake up in the morning and do everything right, that I can't be perfect. I keep looking to flip that switch. But I'm through the first step, recognizing the powerlessness and unmanageability in my life, on into the second step, understanding that I really don't have the power, and the power comes only from one source, and that source is God. I was faced squarely with that issue. There wasn't anything in this world or anything inside of me that could make me feel better, that could restore me to sanity. God was the only power available, the only power possible that could do that for me. My next problem was dealing with God. Once I became willing to believe, then I was thrown into a situation where the only God that I had was the God of my childhood. The God of my childhood was vindictive, not terribly interested. He might or might not come through for me. My God worked on a system of rewards and punishments, the God that I brought with me from childhood. What it really boiled down to is the God that I had learned about as a child was a reflection of my training. I went to parochial school, and also really a reflection of my parents. My parents weren't there. They were absent. They were not terribly interested. And that's the kind of God that I had. Obviously, that kind of God was not going to restore me to sanity. He wouldn't care enough. So I began to look into this issue called God and listen to other people and talk to other people and began to form my own beliefs, truly my own beliefs about God and His power and His love and His interest in my life. Today I believe that God knows more about me than I know about myself. I believe that He cares more about me than I care about myself. And that's a real comforting feeling, to know that God, who I believe is all-powerful, cares for me and will walk with me on a daily basis as I walk through these issues and as I deal with codependency and addictions and just the day-to-day problem of living. He is in the process of restoring me to sanity, but what the second step says is that I came to believe it. And the key to that, that I found in my recovery, is willingness. If I'm simply willing to believe, if I'm simply willing to say, God, if you're there, come into my life, show yourself to me, so that I might understand, so that I might have faith. And He did. I, like so many other people, felt terminally unique in that this God thing would work for other people, but it wouldn't work for me. No possible way. But it has, in fact, worked for me.
My name is Annie. I am a codependent. Step two was real hard for me. As I was in recovery from my addictions, step two is one that I kind of just bounced right over. I didn't even want to see it. And what I've come to believe is that in the other 12-step programs I was in, and the avoidance that I had of step two was because I had a shame core that told me I couldn't look at that one. My family secret is insanity. It is something that we never talked about. And when that uncomfortability came and I had to go in one more time and find out who I was and what was really going on, step two was the one that came out loud and clear, because that's where I really needed to deal. I, like Jim, thought that I had a very condemning God and that God would not be there for me. And it was real difficult to think that something was going to make me okay, because I never felt okay. I still have moments today that I don't feel okay, but I'm slowly learning that God is loving and that He shows me on a daily basis, constantly, neat things in my life. People, places, and things get placed there to help me on my journey home. My shame core gets in the way, though. My shame still tells me that I'm not good enough, and that it's going to happen for everybody else, but it's not going to happen for me. And if I allow my mind to get into that mode, it still will attack me. I mean, it just sits there and it waits for me to be at a vulnerable moment, and it just attacks me with one of those old tapes. I'm real glad today that I have tools that can get me out of that uncomfortability real fast. One of the things I heard was that I was important enough to ask and I was divine enough to be answered. And it's something that I say to myself when I really get into my crazies. I may only have to talk it and think it for a while until it finally goes down into a feeling level, because my shame blocks my feelings at times. I mean, my shame just totally puts a block up there. Once I can get down into the feelings, I can usually start to let go and start to deal with whatever issue is there. And it really doesn't feel as crazy as I think it does at the moment. As a child, I didn't have the capacity to feel because I shut them all off, and that is the way I had to survive. What I discovered in recovery was that I had manifested a couple of other diseases besides the ones I had already encountered and opened up, and one of them was called Candida. It's the yeast problem, and the other one is PMS. Where that came from was my rage, and my rage manifested out of trying to control what was going on in my life. And I've had to deal with that in recovery, and it's much better now than it ever was. I had taken on my mother's shame and her insanity and thought it was mine, and had to go through that in recovery and learn that what was hers had to be given back to her, and what was mine I had to keep. I have two children too, and one of the hard things to look at was the fact that I had already given my children a lot of these patterns to form their life, and that was not a real pleasant thought. I did not like that at all, but that's reality in our family. The only benefit from that is my children have been in recovery for 4.5 years, and today that doesn't exist in my household. We are slowly learning how to talk about feelings. I've taken back my shame. They don't have to live with my insanity. They have their own stuff to deal with. Those kind of things were never, ever even thought of in my home when I was a child. Another one of the things that I've had to look at in recovery is how I set myself up for that insanity. Going in and finding out what my history was and learning the patterns that were formed in my life and changing them allows me not to get into those games anymore. The setups that I put myself into are very uncomfortable, and they're not a necessity today. I have a little feeling way down inside of my stomach. I choose to call it my child. And when I'm not comfortable, that feeling comes through my intuition real strong that I am in the wrong place or doing the wrong thing for me. And I never used to have that. My insanity told me that I was in control and that I didn't have to rely on anything but myself. Today, that child, who I choose to believe is a manifestation of God, is what directs my life and keeps me out of my insane thoughts.
This seemed at first to me like a real, real simple step. And it really is a simple step, but this part here about turning my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood God, I think Jim and Ann really led into it about the God of their childhood. And certainly the God of my childhood was real abusive. In the beginning, what I knew about God was my mom and dad. And through very subtle messages, I learned that mom and dad weren't there for me. So when I'm presented with the idea of God, in my heart of hearts, I did not believe that God or anyone could ever possibly be there for me. So when I'm presented with turning my will over to God, I was presented with a real problem. I had survived on my will. I had kept my heart beating and 10 fingers and 10 toes until my 35th year. All of a sudden, I'm presented with turning my life and my will over to this nebulous force called God, and I got real scared. But I did what I was told to do, and I did turn my life and my will over to God as the best I could at that time. I had to come to some understandings about God. Number one, I had to get my history out of the way. I even had to fire a God and develop and grow to love a new God. The God of my understanding today is a loving, caring friend. He's a God that won't leave me, and he's a God that will help me. And I honestly and truly believe these things about God. Since I have turned my life and my will and made that very vital decision in my life to turn my life and will over to the care of God, I thought from that point on things were going to be just wonderful in my life, that everything was going to straighten out as soon as I got up off my knees. But that's not what happened. It was as if I was looking through a kaleidoscope, and this kaleidoscope was frozen in one position my whole life. And when I turned my life and will over to his care, all of a sudden that kaleidoscope changed and things started leaving my life that I thought I wanted. And things started coming into my life that I certainly didn't think I wanted in my life. But having made that decision, I saw in time, and that's the way that I can see God usually, is in time. It was the best thing, and it was really the only thing that could have happened in my life. I trust God today, and I love God today. God willing, I'm going to continue to do that. The thing I did my entire life until I was presented with this program is I got my worth from other people. I got my feel-goods from other people. If people approved of me, I felt good. If people didn't approve of me, I felt bad. Today, after taking this step and repeated efforts at it, my worth does come from God. My sense of belonging comes from God. My sense of life itself comes from God. God does speak to me through other people, but other people no longer are my gods. My history is not my God. Past relationships and the feelings about those past relationships are not my God. My mom and dad are not my God. And the God that I choose to believe in today truly cares about me, truly leads me, and my primary relationship today has to be with God. I've been married now and in this program going on 4 years. What my wife and myself both had to do was turn our relationship over to God. It was God's marriage. It was God's relationship. It wasn't mine, and it wasn't hers. And we find, since the day we've done that, that there's been some dramatic, dramatic changes in our relationship. To this point, we've been over the first three steps, and, you know, to put it real simple, the first step said that I can't do it, and the second step said God can do it. And here in the third step, I guess what we're saying is, I think I'll let him do it.
My name's Jim, and I'm codependent. The third step for me is something that continues to grow, that I continue to learn about. It's true that what the step says is I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. On a daily basis, I need to renew that decision, need to center myself on that decision. That God does in fact have control of my life and my will. When I first came into the program, first came into recovery and heard that step, after I had realized that I was powerless and that my life was unmanageable, and came to believe that God could in fact give me the power and make my life manageable, all I really needed to do was make the decision to turn it over to Him, to let Him take care of it. And what happened at first was that I said those words, but what happened in actuality was that I turned over little pieces of my life, my addictions, certain problems that I'd be having in terms of work or relationships. As time goes on, I'm beginning to understand the depth of the meaning of the phrase, my life and my will. I mean, that pretty well covers it all. There's not a whole lot left out. And that's what I try to live today, is to have an ongoing understanding that God walks with me, God cares about me, and God will do for me what I cannot do for myself. The third step today means a letting go of all of this ego and all of this pride and all of the things that get in my way of living life on life's terms. I'm battling it, it seems, when I'm not where the third step wants me to be, where I want to be because of the third step. What really I wake up in the morning and I say to God, as I think about the day ahead, I say to God, please remove from my mind all selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty. And it's always a little bit of a shock when I say that to my system. It's like, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to not have selfishness and all this ego and all these other things involved? Because that's my natural way, is to control it myself and try to make myself comfortable and step on other people's toes, even though I don't intend to. What the third step asked me to do is let go of that. To truly be humble in the sense, in the good sense of humility, which is to recognize that God's in control, not me, that He can handle it where I can't.
My name is Annie. I am a codependent. I was thinking as you guys were talking, the very first time that I took my first third step, I can remember standing in my living room and screaming at the top of my lungs, "Okay, I'll trust you." And I don't know who I was screaming at, but I just was screaming. And I was really feeling real scared. I was really in a lot of terror. Today I understand why. My God, in my mind, was just like my father. And even though he could be loving and kind and promise you the world and tell you that he would be there for you and take care of you, the feeling I had inside was that if I ever got into a bind, the rug would get yanked out from underneath me. And I had to finally experience that real traumatic feeling in my recovery and codependency, because that's what was blocking me from my free flow to God. From that very first time that I was in my living room screaming to today, the third step is probably my most favorite step. I do it on a daily basis. It's the first thing I do in the morning. I just slide out of bed and get down on my knees, and I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, and I ask Him to let me be the best I can be, because I don't know what I'm supposed to be. I also ask Him to relieve me of some things like shame and fear, and I always have been taught to say thank you, because even though I was praying, I used to think that God wouldn't hear me. And I was taught to say thank you after anything I prayed, because that way it's just like I trust that He's got it and it's gone. And for a while that felt real foreign, and today it doesn't. I just say thank you. I say thank you a lot during the day, because I really do have a connection with God today. And I know that in order for me to survive in this world and to live comfortably, I can't do it without my connection to God. I have just finally understood that my connection to God and understanding that the universe is there to take care of me is a real comforting place to be. And I couldn't stay on a daily living ability without that. I mean, I get into issues every day and situations that, you know, make me work my program. And I can't do it alone today. I mean, I know that, and it's a belief. It's not just in my mind. I'm not analyzing it, trying to figure out why I can't. It's just really kind of fun to watch it happen. You know, it's real interesting to watch the situations and the people, places, and things that get put in my way. And the minute I ask for something today, I get it. And the old saying is, be careful of what you ask for. I laugh about that now, because I usually get what I ask for. But what I find is that there really is no right or wrong in my world, or good or bad anymore. There's just experiences and situations, and they're there for me to choose what I want to do with them. That's the free choice I have, the power that God gave me to make choices in my life. I never had that before, because I didn't know how to make choices. And lots of times I don't know how to do it. I get real confused, and I stand there and I just go, "Oh God, now what do I do?" But that's all I have to do, is just stand there and tap in and say, "Okay, God, I can't handle this." And usually somebody appears, or something gets put in my way, a book or a television program or something that I hear a message from. You know, somebody's got something to say, and I see it. That awareness is my gift, and it's the most special thing in my world today. It's really beautiful to walk through life and watch it happen. It doesn't mean I don't get scared, because I do. Coming from the world I come from, that little girl still gets scared inside. But as the journey goes on, she's not as afraid as she used to be. She's learning she doesn't have to be. And I don't give her all that power either. She doesn't have to stand right out in front of me screaming and raging and yelling and kicking. And today she's real peaceful. There's a part of her that's happy and joyous and enjoying life and not afraid, knowing that God won't abandon her, knowing that I won't abandon her. And the three of us kind of live inside of me together. That's how I choose to look at it. That God is the parent, I am the adult, and the child is the child. And the three of us kind of live there. it's a real neat experience to feel those different feelings that go with those levels when I tap into that.
My name's Curly and I'm codependent. I think another thing I had to do was really take a hard and honest look at where my self-will had led me. And at all times, my self-will had led me almost to destruction. And whether that was with chemicals or other people, what have you, it always ended in destruction with my addictions. I had to find a better way. One of the first things that I had to do was make a list of who and what had really been my God. And what I found out that for my entire life, other people had been my God, chemicals had been my God, ideas had been my God, but I had never surrendered to this power greater than myself. What I have found out is that God has always been there for me, and I believe He always will. I think what we've been doing here is really alluding to the decision. And in the end, it's a simple decision. It's real simple. You know, once it, we understand, or I understand at depth, that my will led to destruction, and since I've been allowing God to control my life, at best what I can tell you is things have been real, real good. God has never left me. He's always led me into real constructive situations. Once I understood that His will at all times was good for me. I think the prayer that I prayed when I did turn myself over to God was somewhere along the lines of that He could do with me what He wanted to do with me. That He could take me where He wanted to take me. He could lead me where He wanted to lead me. That my life was not mine anymore. And through the pain and through the fear and through the shame and through the real degradation of what I had done in my codependency, my life was now His. And on a daily basis, as Jim and Annie were both talking about, I continue to give it to Him. And one thing that I can say is since I've started doing that, my life has gotten better and better and better. I progressed in my codependency until near suicide, and now I'm finding in my recovery I'm also progressing, but it's towards a more happy and fulfilling life. And always wanting to really know Him better and love Him more.
My name's Jim and I'm codependent. To comment on a couple of things that other people have said, one is, when I came down to the point where I understood on a real basic level that when I ran my life according to my will, as Curly said, I was heading towards self-destruction. It was like going into battle with a gun that shot the wrong way. I was going to do myself in one way or another. I had to come to the understanding that ultimately God's will for me was the best that I could imagine, better than I could imagine. And that what it really came down to is the decision to let Him act through me, to let go of the ego and the pride and all those other things. Really what I wanted to express more than anything else is just my gratitude, because miracle of miracles, today it's happening. Today I've been in recovery for a while, and I'm different than I was when I came into recovery. I am not the same person. And let me tell you, that's not for anything that I've done. That's not through some mental exercise that I've gone through. It's simply through letting go, trusting God, and He seems to put attributes into my life, into my personality, people in my life that build me up, situations that challenge me and force me to grow. But the best thing that comes out of it today is that, and there was a time when I simply could not imagine this, today I like me. Today I like the person that I am and the person that I'm becoming. I could not do that on my own. I not only could not change anything about myself, I certainly couldn't feel good about me. Today I like me. Today I'm comfortable to a certain extent with my world. I'm certainly real grateful for the hope that I have. Today I have hope where none existed before, because of God, because of this third step, because I trust that He is going to make my life better. He's going to continue to change me, give me what I need.
My name is Annie. I am a codependent. You know, sitting here reflecting back, and it just shows me that God is running my life when I can sit in a group like this afternoon and feel the feelings I'm feeling as we're taping this, and to know that it's okay, that I trust enough to sit here and reveal myself on these tapes. I never could do that when I first got here. I didn't trust myself, let alone God, let alone you. And today I can sit and tell you who I am because I know who I am. As Jim said, I really didn't do anything spectacular to get me to that point. But I do believe through the willingness to just do what I need to do got me to where I am today. I had to learn how to trust God and then myself and then other people. And the way I did that was working my program. My sponsor was the first woman I learned how to trust. She was put in my life, and I learned how to trust another human being after I learned how to trust that God wasn't going to abandon me or pull the rug out from underneath me. I learned that neither would she. And with that, I learned how to trust myself, because now I had a model to show me in life how to do things. And since then, God has put other people in my life that I am slowly learning to trust. And I find myself in situations that I never would have set myself up in, going down into the jails. I would never put myself down there. And yet I watch how comfortable it is when I'm in there. And I don't do that. I don't do any of that. If I had my way, I would have this little set pattern of how my life should be. And if you told me I was going to find the things that I find in the situations I get into today that I can smile about and feel comfortable with, I would have thought you were crazy. But God really does know a lot better than I do. And through allowing the flow to just happen, it just makes it comfortable. It's real good to be in recovery. I'm real glad my family's in recovery. My children, I should say, not my family, because my family isn't, my children and I. Because it just makes life a lot easier when you can understand through a program of recovery what it's all about. You know, we understand what each other's talking about today, and we have a connection to God, and that's something none of us had before. They've gone their own separate ways, and they're starting to learn to make decisions and take responsibility for their life. And it's been kind of neat to be a single mom and to do that with them, you know, at my age, to learn how to be responsible for my life and my decisions. It's kind of a different experience. We laugh about it and think, well, it's new, but we're doing it together. And that's a beautiful gift. It really is.
My name's Curly, and I'm codependent. I just want to thank everybody here, Jim and Annie, and I want you to know this was a real scary thing for me to do. I'd just like to thank both of you for your support. Now, I just want to say, I guess I personally believe that God was in this room and God was here and did speak through us. So I'd like to thank both of you, really.
And I would like to thank you guys for being here, too. I just really was sitting here with a lot of apprehension going on, you know, having to do this perfect. Mm-hmm. And you've both been real supportive in telling me I didn't. And I do believe God was here today, too. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Ann.
My name is Jim, and I'm a codependent.
Hi, Jim.
I also want to thank you for your support. Something like this is scary. I keep thinking about the people out there who will be listening to this tape as they ride in their cars or whatever they're doing. And I know listening to you that it really will be helpful. I hope it has been helpful.
When I look at steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, the first thing that I'm aware of is that all four of those steps really deal with my relationship with myself. And I really believe that the first three steps help us to get right with God. The next four steps help us to get right with ourselves. And the next two steps help us to get right with other people. And I tend to work those steps backwards in some ways. And I look at step 7 and as it reads, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Early on, my question was, how do I humbly ask God? How do I get to be humble and not in a false sort of way and act as though a false prophet? In time, what I heard out of other 12-step programs that I also belong to was the fact that humility is really born out of my own shortcomings and out of my own faults and out of the areas where I have been wrong. So steps 4, 5, and 6 are a way for me to become aware of where I have been wrong and experience my humiliation about my shortcomings and my wrongdoings and how I had wronged and hurt other people. It's been helpful in understanding that for a long time steps 6 and 7 have both been sleepers to me. And I wasn't quite sure what all that meant, except that every once in a while I'd find myself cut down to my knees and feeling extremely humble because of something I had done wrong and having to really work those steps within my heart. Step 4 has always been difficult for me in that I've been afraid to look at who I am and what I am because I'm a shame-based person and I grew up in an overwhelming amount of shame, thinking that I was less than and dumb and stupid and foolish and inadequate, and that if you all really knew what I was really like, you'd hate me. So looking at step 4 and trying to take a look at myself for real has put me right in touch with that shame, and there's been times when I'd go to any lengths to not be in touch with that shame and avoid it, so I wouldn't look at who I really am and instead want to fight and defend and protect and ignore and blame and accuse in every way I could to stay away from owning what I had done. It also helps me to separate my behavior from the person that God created. And I really believe that in the first 3 steps, I come to know the person that God created and that there is a difference between the person that God created within me and my behavior. And step 4 helps me to look at my behavior and what I have done. And though I am aware that I learned behaviors out of my childhood, which may be victimizing or may be offensive or may be helpless or may be hopeless or maybe controlling or managing or manipulating or harmful or abusive or neglectful to people, places, and things. I learned those out of my childhood. They are still mine. They're my behaviors, and I must in 4, 5, 6, and 7 own my own codependency, no matter where I learned it from. I know that I have a right to hold people accountable for their behavior, especially out of my family of origin and my childhood. And I must do that to begin to recover and to not only hold them accountable but have my feelings about what they have done. But I also need to then bring this program into a recovery process whereby I own my own codependency and what I had taken out of that as my own behavior and how I've learned to be codependent and be offensive and be abusive and neglectful and harmful and hurtful and controlling and managing and manipulative of people in my adult life. And even look at the more subtle issues, such as how I've passively been helpless and gotten people to fix me and taking care of me, how I've offensively hurt people, how I've controlled my children and my friends and my family, how I've harmed and controlled the people that I've worked with, and most of all, how I've harmed and controlled and done to the child within me what was done to me as a child. Those are the only behaviors I knew in terms of surviving. And I also believe that I cannot change what I can't see. And in doing a thorough, honest, heartfelt 4th step, I can then see what it is I need to change. And in that process, I become aware of the humiliation that I have about my own actions and my behaviors and the pain that I've caused myself and other people and the losses that I've caused myself and other people and the loneliness and the fear and the shame that I've, in a sense, focused or projected onto other people that I didn't want to look at myself.
I'm Barbara M., and I'm a codependent. When I think of steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, I think about trying to share with somebody else about who I am and about my faults and my defects of character. And the fear that I had from the very beginning was that I had the need to be right. And it was terrifying for me to be wrong, because if I was wrong, then I was less than, and I felt the shame just from making a mistake. And that was from being a child. I was so neglected that if I was perfect, did perfectly, then my parents would notice me. That didn't happen, but as I became a member of Codependence Anonymous and started to look at my character defects, it was really hard for me to be really honest, because I really was afraid that I wouldn't be accepted, and again I would be neglected, and I would be abandoned, and you wouldn't care about me. So I had that need to be perfect and to be right. So the 4th step was very difficult for me to do. for a long time it was difficult for me to even look at some of the things that I was doing that were very harmful to myself and to other people. Sometimes I didn't even know them, and so that was why I had a sponsor that would tell me what I was doing that was harmful to myself, harmful to other people, that was a character defect. And that's been extremely important to me, to be able to write that down in black and white and to see on paper what I have been doing and to be really honest. I also was afraid of doing the fourth step imperfectly, so I had to do a perfect fourth step, and I didn't know how to do that. So what I did was I asked God to write it for me, and so I wrote whatever He had me write, and it's so far that has worked. I have done many different four steps. Sometimes I do a four step on a particular thing, a particular person. I have to write it down, look at it, and share it with somebody so that I can let go of it. And it has been really incredibly helpful to me to share that with somebody, to own my defects, to feel my own shame about it, to feel my guilt about it, to know that I am imperfect, which lets God be perfect, and to give me much more of an understanding of just being a part of a whole and not having to do it all or not having to do it all correctly.
My name is Mary and I'm codependent. Step four for me, that was something that I've heard Barb and Ken talk about, that the shame gets involved in that. And for me, it got involved in there because I truly believed that I was a mistake and that everything that I did was wrong and that I was real grandiose and thinking that I was the worst of the worst. And that if I did this moral inventory of myself, it was just going to validate all that. And I didn't want to go through feeling that shame again. And I had worked real hard at acting like I didn't need anybody and acting like I had it all together and didn't have any problems and all that kind of stuff, and was just being more and more unhappy. What I found out for me, that by really turning around and looking at how I offend other people, how I end up hurting people, how I shame people, how I do that to myself, that by doing that I had a lot more freedom in my life and I didn't have to be bound to those old behaviors. I also, when I first started working on this step, I wanted to get more into looking at the blaming my parents, and I had to realize that that was another one of my character defects, that I needed to be accountable for my own behaviors no matter where I learned them, and that I'm the one that lives with those behaviors and I'm the one who acts them out, and so I'm the one that needs to be working on those behaviors. And it helped a lot separating who I am as a person and who that child is, and recognizing that that child learned a lot of survival behaviors growing up, but that I've taken that and I've kept on surviving instead of living. And I just, life had gotten too painful for me and got me to a point that I was willing to surrender and to where I was willing to start looking at myself instead of looking at other people. Part of what I had to do with that too, because I believe all the steps had to do with the grieving process for me, and the fourth step had to do with the grieving process. I had to look at how I had hurt other people and what I had lost in my life as a result of my behaviors. And there was a lot that I had lost. I had lost relationships, and relationships with my kids, relationships with my family of origin, and relationship with myself. And that I had lost the most important things in life to me. I didn't have a relationship with God before I came to this program, and I didn't even know what that all meant. I knew how to make everybody else my God, but I didn't know how to have a relationship with a higher power. So doing the step for me was real freeing. It's kind of like putting the light on the darkness, and the more that I was willing to look at that darkness inside of me and how I do offend other people, the more I was able to free myself from it. And that came into the fifth step for me too.
And the fifth step is a way of then processing or relieving or letting go of who I am. God knows who I am, I believe. and has known the desires of my heart and known my behavior all along. So it's no big deal to say to God, hey God, this is what I've done, and then go on down the road. And I've obviously known who I am and what I've done most of my life. Matter of fact, I've been beating myself half to death for what it is I thought I was. But to share with another human being the exact nature of my wrongs, it is at times and has been a terrifying thought, because you may judge me or not like me or think that I'm just this dumb, stupid, foolish, inadequate person. And that's where my historical shame comes in and keeps me from being honest with people, places, and things. The reverse of that is in doing that step and finding out that I can be free from that and actually being more vulnerable and intimate with another human being in the process. And that I think a key in doing a fifth step is finding and discerning and knowing who to do the fifth step with. Obviously, I want to find somebody who's not going to judge me and laugh at me and point their finger at me and do what was done to me in my childhood. And when I found myself able to do a fifth step, the freedom and the release has been incredible. In some ways, I do fifth steps a lot. The more I try, and it's tied into the tenth step, and owning where I have been wrong and promptly making amends as I can. The way the steps are laid out, as I understand them, as I said earlier, the first three steps help us to get right with God. The next four get us right with our relationship with ourselves. And the next two help us to get right with our relationship with others. And that's all encompassed in the fifth step. I need to share with God, myself, and others the exact nature of my wrongs. And in doing so, the magic of doing so frees me and begins the process of healing within me. It also teaches me to understand that I'm not bad or wrong, but I am human and I have shortcomings and I'm fallible and I can make mistakes. And I don't have to beat myself half to death for doing so.
Admitting to God the exact nature of my wrong has not been that difficult for me. Admitting to another person has been much more difficult. I do believe that I'm as sick as my secrets, and I can say by sharing with somebody else the exact nature of my wrongs, then I have learned to not be able to not have to do it again. Like, I don't have to do the pattern over and over again. And that's what I believe part of that fourth step is about, is sharing the patterns, because we all continue to do the pattern over and over again until we learn not to. And I believe that that fifth step, sharing it with a safe person, allows me to share the patterns, and then they can help me look at that and I can stop the pattern. I know that by sharing with another person allows me to free myself from feeling that I'm bad or that I'm wrong or that I have to keep it to myself, because if I keep my wrongdoings to myself, then they get bigger and bigger and they get exaggerated and I think I'm worse and worse as a person. So by sharing them, that's allowed me the freedom to know that I'm not the only person that's ever done it, or it's not that big of a deal. I thought in my first fourth step, when I shared it with my sponsor, that she would think I was just so horrible that she would never have anything to do with me. And I remember her practically falling asleep when she listened to me. It was no big deal. She had done the same things, or she had heard somebody that had done the same things. And so today, it's a lot easier to share the things that I need to share with people. I am grateful to have the steps 4 and 5 in my life, because I am so glad that I'm not alone, that I'm not the only one that does these things that I think are so horrible, that I can be honest with somebody. I am not honest with everybody about everything, and I think that's really important, that we find people that are safe to share these steps with, because we can get hurt. And I really have looked for safe people to share these things with, and I think that it's really freed me.
My name's Mary, and I'm codependent. One of my roles from childhood was to hold all the secrets, and I also held all the secrets about myself and wouldn't let people know who I was and wouldn't let them know what I was feeling or thinking or anything, which is, when you're in a relationship, or when I'm in a relationship, that's real offensive on my part, because I need to be honest about what I'm thinking and feeling. So to admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, for me to do that was breaking the secrets, letting them out, again putting some light on that darkness, recognizing that, yeah, I really have hurt a lot of people, instead of looking at how all these people, different people in my life hurt me, I needed to look at how I hurt other people. Because as long as I wanted to hold on to blame in my life, there wasn't any freedom in it. So looking at my offensive behaviors and talking about those with another person helped me to know that I am human and that I'm going to make mistakes and that I am just as offensive as the people who I wanted to blame out there were offensive to me. And that part of this process is I needed to start forgiving myself. And that started happening for me with the fifth step, because I was able to lay it all out on the table, more or less, looking at my behaviors, and start going, yeah, I've really messed up a lot. I don't care to treat people that way anymore, and I don't want to offend people, and I'm willing to go to any lengths to do whatever it is I need to do to change that. And that's where step six came in for me.
Codependence Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women whose common purpose is to develop healthy relationships. It is not affiliated with any other 12-step program. The 12 steps of Codependence Anonymous are adapted with permission of Alcoholics Anonymous World Services, Incorporated. You are listening to personal sharing on the 12 steps of Codependence Anonymous. This CD's audio content is produced by Codependence Anonymous Incorporated and is copyright Codependence Anonymous Incorporated and its licensors, all rights reserved. None of the audio content herein may be reproduced in any form. More information is available about CODA on the web at www.coda.org.
the humiliation that I have felt in doing the fifth step about my own actions and behaviors has oftentimes driven me to the point where I am entirely ready to have God remove my shortcomings. Matter of fact, I'm ready to give it to Him now, fix it, get rid of this. I don't want to feel this anymore. Take it away. And that usually doesn't happen. And part of the process, I believe, is accepting who I am today and owning who I am and being at peace with that and not condemning and judging myself. Out of that humiliation, I can then humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings.
Step six and seven, I do believe, are really spiritual steps, and they're some of the hardest ones for me to do. When I looked at being entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, I had to really look at if I wanted to give them all up. Sometimes there are defects of character that I don't want to give up. When I first got into the program, there were things that I knew that I wanted to give up. But sometimes I have not wanted to give up gossiping. That's being really honest. I have not wanted to stop talking about other people sometimes. And I've had to say, this is my inventory, and I've shared my inventory with my sponsor or someone safe. And then I've said, you know what? I'm going to have to try to keep my mouth shut. And God, please, you give me the power. I'm turning over this character defect to you. And then I've noticed that it hasn't been gone, and I've realized that it's because I wanted to keep gossiping about people. I've also had a very difficult time, for example, with honesty. And when I got into another 12-step program, I stopped stealing from other people. But when I got into Codependence Anonymous and I realized that I wanted to be honest, I wasn't sure if I wanted to tell them everything. Like, I wanted to omit certain things just so I could still look better to that person or those people. So those are the things I've really had to look at. Am I really entirely ready? Or are there things that I really want to keep? Do I want to keep arrogant? Do I want people to still think I'm perfect? Do I still sometimes want to feel better than other people? And sometimes those things are really true for me. The good news for me about doing step six and seven in this program are that God makes the decision of whether these defects of character are gone or not. And if they are not taken away from me right away, or when I think they're supposed to be taken away, it's because God has a different plan for me. And He takes them away when He is ready to. And if He doesn't take them away, I believe that He wants me to keep doing them so that I'm going to become more humble, I will need Him more, and that I'm going to help people more. by doing the same behavior over and over again. I'm going to learn from those character defects about other people and how to not judge other people's mistakes, because I keep making the same mistakes over and over. And as I work these steps more and more, I become less judgmental. And I have been on my butt over and over again with the rug pulled out from under me year after year, because I have continued to do the character defects that I judge other people for having. So I really love these steps, 6 and 7. I have many defects of character, and I do also believe that I would like some of them taken away right this minute. But then I have to look at how willing I am to stop the behavior. And sometimes I am absolutely not willing. And that's the big thing I have to look at. Another thing is a funny thing. I've been trying for 8 years, for example, to get organized. I have asked God to take that character defect away of being unorganized, because it's really made me suffer with my professional life and my personal life. And He hasn't taken it away. I have files, I have lists, and I lose the lists. And so I have asked Him over and over again to make me organized, and He hasn't. So I'm just expecting that I'm not supposed to be organized yet. I keep buying files and briefcases, but it doesn't do any good. The briefcase is in the closet, and I'm still unorganized. And so I really believe that God wants me to stay unorganized. And when I can share those things, like being unorganized or dishonest or whatever the character defect is, some people really can relate to me. And that's what is the beauty of this program, is that my imperfection has made me more accessible to more people. It makes me belong, finally, to somebody, and which means this group of Codependents Anonymous. And it feels good to be a member of, and a member of in good standing to me is by continuing to work this program and be fallible. My fallibility is making me belong more than my perfectionism. And that is a wonderful thing to have learned from me.
My name's Mary, and I'm codependent. Being entirely ready for me meant that I was willing to go to any lengths in my recovery program. And I was willing to do what my sponsor was suggesting to me, and I was willing to work on, do whatever kind of work I needed to do on my character defects, risking, even though I was real scared, to try new behaviors, listening to affirmation tapes if I needed to do that so I'd change my thinking about myself. And not stay in that martyr role or that victim role for me. When I became willing to go to any lengths, meant that I was not going to stay a victim any longer, and I was not going to stay a martyr, and I wasn't going to blame anymore, because I was going to start taking responsibility for my own life. And that was a growing up process for me, because I was so irresponsible all my life and wanted to make everybody else responsible, that this was a time that I got to grow up and I got to be responsible, and I got to start parenting that child inside and being responsible for her instead of making everybody else responsible.
I really am amazed at the profound spirituality in all the steps, but especially in 4 through 7. It's the 7th step, the 6th and 7th step, where I recognize that I am truly human and I'm not godlike and I have no power and control over other people. That I am not perfect, that I'm fallible and I make mistakes. And humility grows out of that, and in doing so, it allows room for God to work within me. I'm either perfect and in control of people, places, and things, or God's running the show. And as long as I am trying to control, manage, and manipulate, even to the point of harming people, places, and things, there's no room for God. I'm playing God. So the experience of my relationship with God comes through the 6th and 7th step. I can think about it and talk about it all I want and talk about it in meetings forever, but the experience of my relationship with God really comes through 6th and 7th step. The humility found there will allow me to, well, actually, the reverse will allow God to touch my heart and to work within me and through me. And that when that doesn't take place, then I'm doing an intellectual job and not a heartfelt job.
I do remember reading in a book about humility on this step, and it was talking about that do we really want to be humble for humility's sake? Do we really want God to be in control of us? Or do we just want to look good and say that I'm humble? Am I looking humble because that's going to get me something? And what is my motivation for having humility? And I think that as a human being, I have no idea about what humility even means. And all I can do is by being up against the wall, by having enough pain in my life, by my character defects causing me enough pain, by having the relationships around me suffer and myself suffer and my precious child suffer, that I am learning what humility really means and that I want to be more humble. Because as a human, I have no idea what that means. I also need God desperately in my life, and I need Him today more than I've ever needed Him, and I forget that. And because of my shortcomings and knowing that God is the only being that can take care of these shortcomings and remove them from me, I need Him more and more today than I ever have before. And I'm so grateful, after being in this program for a while, that I need God more than I did when I first came here. And that is the beauty of this program, is that we never do not need God in our life. He is everything or He is nothing. And today I believe that He is everything, and when I forget that is when I get uncomfortable and need to start working these steps again. I've done the fourth and the fifth step many times. I need to do it again. I need to do them on every relationship that I have. I'll have to do them on every relationship I'm going to have, probably, because I do have shortcomings in every area of my life. And I believe that these steps, every part of these steps, 4, 5, 6, and 7, make me absolutely closer to myself, help me be able to relate to other people, keep me from having secrets to myself. They're going to keep me from moving into other addictions, or my primary addiction, which was alcoholism and drug addiction. And it will keep me closer to having some joy in my life and some peace. And I really am hoping that little by little all that comes to pass more, and it's all been working these four steps.
My name's Mary, and I'm codependent. Step 7, humbly asking God to remove our shortcomings. That went right along with step 6, because as Barb was saying, I'm not even sure what being humble is, except that I know that there is a God and I'm not God. And that's as close to me recognizing what being humble is about, and just knowing that I'm human, that I'm going to make mistakes, and that the only way that I can work through my shortcomings is by asking God to help me, praying for the power and the willingness to do whatever it is I need to do with that. For me, step 6 and 7 is where I truly develop a personal relationship with my higher power, because that's where I start putting even more so my life in God's hands and saying, I have really screwed my life up, and I have really hurt a lot of people, and there's a lot of things I'm not proud of, but I know that God loves me and that God will help me work through these issues. And it was spending some time meditating and in prayer and whatever else I needed to do to have that relationship with God. Because as long as I was putting God first in my life, then I was willing to let God work in my life. I had to be willing to let God work in my life if I was going to have Him removing my shortcomings. So willingness played a big part in that. And I'm real grateful for those two steps, because the first time I'd gone around working these steps, I didn't really look at them a whole lot, and I thought, oh yeah, I'll just pray about this and ask God to help me with all this, but it never made any sense. And when things weren't changing for me, I had to go back to there and say, wait a minute, you know, there's more to these two steps than what I wanted to see before, and it's not a matter of just doing some quick prayer. There's a lot of responsibility that goes with it, and it's being willing to do the footwork and then letting God have my life. And those two things for me, I'm real grateful for all, for 4, 5, 6, and 7. It's been the beginning of the freedom that I've felt in this program, the freedom that I've been able to have with myself, just knowing that I am human. That's a big part of it for me, because I came from so much of the together stuff and the needless stuff. I don't have to do that today. And if I do get into it, I can just go back and work the steps again.
My name's Curly and I'm codependent. Step 8. I had made my initial list of the persons that I had harmed back in my 4-step inventory. When I first looked at this list of people, some of them I really wanted to make amends to right away, and some of them I wanted to make amends to for an ulterior motive. Some of them I wasn't willing to make amends to them at all at that time. But what I started seeing was the people that really deserved an amends from me. And I just don't, for me, it's not just a simple, you know, I'm sorry. I had to feel it at an emotional level that I really owed these people an amends for something I had done. Those were the hardest ones. So it great fear for me, and sometimes a lot of pain, I did go to these people, the majority of them, and did make amends to them, which is leading into step 9.
My name is Annie. I am a codependent. Just listening to Curly, I was telling him he triggered a lot of things in me. Looking at these 5 steps that are left, you know, each time I work the steps, it allows me to go deeper and deeper inside, and I get a little bit closer to God. That was something I didn't know how to do when I first got into recovery. I thought really when I got to recovery that I'd work the steps once and I'd be well and wonderful and my whole life would change and it would be great. They were real scary to do the first time. I didn't know why I was scared, but today I realized that doing them, I started to become responsible for myself and my behavior and my actions, and that was something I'd never done before. And I really thought that possibly I was going to find this terrible person in there, but that wasn't true. One of the things on step 8, making amends, I really had to become willing to do that. After I had done my 4-step 2, I found out what had happened in my world. Being willing to go back and confront was real difficult for me. I don't do confrontations real well. I either go 1 step up and become real important or 1 step down and totally give my power away to somebody. So confronting an issue and telling someone else the mistakes I made was real difficult, especially my family. I felt as though if I told my mother that I had made mistakes, that what she told me would totally be validated. And that wasn't true. One of the things I've learned in this program is to own my motives. And that was also something I didn't know how to do. And I had to start doing that as I worked these steps. My shame really stops me from getting in there and being who I really am. Another thing that I've learned is that whenever I'm in a relationship of any sort with another human being, I'm only 50% of that relationship. They're the other 50%. I used to take on all of it, and I didn't know how to let them have their side.
My name is Jim, and I'm codependent. The 8-step, making a list and become willing to make amends, the key word there for me is being willing. I am relatively new in recovery, and so I have not gone through the process of making an official list dating back through my childhood of people that I need to make amends to and gone through that process. However, there have been situations that come up from time to time where it's obvious that I've made a mistake and I need to make amends to people. And there have been people out of my past that I've made amends to already. And again, the key word for me is willing. To be willing to come to a point where I can put the other person and what they did out of it and simply look at what I did wrong. Why I did what I did. To be able to look at my motives, what it is that I was feeling and what was threatened in me that I had to do what I did at that time, where I may have made a mistake or said something that I shouldn't have said. Again, the key is to see my fault and leave the other person out of it. Although I may look at their behavior and I may get angry about it and feel that I'm, quote, justified in my anger, this is about my recovery. This is not about that individual. It's not about how they wronged me. What goes on with me is that different events that have happened through my life tend to come back and haunt me, if only in my own mind. I'll replay different things that I might have shame about or feel guilty about or be sad about.
in situations with people. What I need to do is I need to resolve those situations, and that's what the eighth and ninth steps are about. To be able to look at those situations, meet with those people, and own my behavior and make my amends.
My name is Ken and I'm codependent. When I look at steps 8 and 9, I'm reminded always of what I did when I first got into recovery. And that's that I ran around like crazy begging people to forgive me for what I had done, so that if you would just forgive me, then I'd be okay. And I used these steps well out of order to give you the power of making me okay or not okay. Unfortunately, some of you people didn't forgive me and were rather hostile towards me when I asked you to forgive me, and I went right back into old codependent sick behaviors, obviously giving the power of God away to you. For me, that's what codependency is about. On a spiritual level, it's about a conflict in God's. And when I honestly took a look at this step, I think the wisdom in this step, part of the wisdom in both of these steps, comes in the position of the steps, that I have to build a foundation first in my relationship with God in the first three steps, in my relationship with myself in the next four steps, and then I have the strength and the well-being and the relationship that I need and the power that I need to be able to go to you and make amends. And if you don't like what I've done or don't respond favorably to me, that's okay. That is about you, and I don't have to go backwards in reaction to it. I really believe that 8 and 9 are the steps that we take to help right our relationships with other people. We begin to rebuild the damage caused by codependency. When I was willing to come out of some of my delusion and really clearly look at my codependent behavior, the first thing that hit for me in making a list of persons that I had harmed was that everything in the world is my fault. And being a shame-based type person, it's either all my fault or all somebody else's. There's no middle ground. And the steps have helped me learn that it's not my fault or your fault, it just is. And that my job is to do the best job I can with what I have, and that I am human and fallible. In making a list of persons that I had harmed, I found that to be the easy part of this step. The willingness to make amends to them all has been the scary part. Because of my fear, my codependent fear of what others may think of me, the thought of being that vulnerable with people and risking to that degree has never been easy. I'm willing to do it and continue to do it, but it's not been easy for me.
My name's Mary and I'm codependent. The eighth step for me, the key that was in that was being willing. And that was, along with step 7, step 8 to me is a real humbling step. And it's again a step that brings me closer to God. Because if I'm going to be willing to make amends for all the stuff that I had done to people and the way that I had harmed them, I sure want God to be by my side while I'm doing this.
That second phrase, except when to do so would injure them or others. What I would not do if I had an affair on my wife, which I haven't, I would not go to her and make amends to her because I did that, because that would cause her undue pain and damage her, and it would be very disrespectful to her. But what I would do is possibly tell my sponsor about it and work through it that way. The whole point of step 9 to me is cleaning my side of the street. Regardless of what the other people or persons think, whether my amends is received or not received, really it's a life and death mission. I believe that step 9 takes care of my guilt. The step also reads direct amends. And to me that means exactly what it says, that if they're in another state or farther away, I will either call them on the telephone or write them a letter. If they're in my neighborhood, I will go directly to them. And what I won't do is, for instance, have Jim go to Ken and make amends for me. You know, that's not really what the step's saying. But I think it's real important before we do this that we're emotionally ready to do that, where we can feel at an emotional level that we have in fact injured someone, that we have in fact done someone some harm, and it is very necessary for us to make amends. And you know, this has to do with creditors. This has to do with people we've harmed way back in our past. We have to disregard the other person entirely when we're doing this. We can't go up to that person and say, I want to make amends to you because of such and such, but you know, I wouldn't have done it if you wouldn't have done this and what have you. You know, that's sort of continuing on with the damage that's being done.
Making the amends and where it wouldn't injure other people, I had a couple of those I had to do. They were with past relationships that I had with men, and they were very well left alone. It would have opened up old wounds. But I did own what I had done in these relationships, and I watched how I had set myself up and set the situation up to meet my needs. And I shared that with my sponsor also, and with God. And I wrote letters with some of them, and just read the letters and then burnt them. And that way it was gone. Making amends for me really started to free all of that stuff that I kept hidden way down inside. Talking about it and talking to other people about these things, just the bond that started to be made afterwards, I couldn't explain it, but there was a bond. My parents today do not understand what I'm doing. They still can't comprehend what I talk about, but there's a difference there. Making the amends and owning who I am and staying on my side of the street allows me to let them be who they are. I don't always have to like what they do, but it at least gives me that freedom. I do that on step 10, too. Every day of my life, I'm in relationships with people, from, you know, meeting somebody on the street to my priority relationship.
The ninth step for me, what comes out of it is being able to let go of those situations, not continue to play them in my mind and beat myself with them or shame myself with them. I'm able to let go of them at that point when I can admit what I've done wrong, make the amends, and then at that point I've done everything that I can do. I can let go of all the feelings associated around this situation, whatever it may have been. And oftentimes there is a lot of guilt and there is a lot of shame. I can let go of those feelings. What comes out of it is a recognition that I'm human and that I'm not perfect and that I make mistakes. And it's an active exercise in humility, in understanding that God's in control and that I'm okay. I'm still okay even though I make those mistakes, even though I step on people's toes, as long as I do remain willing to make amends and make those amends when they won't hurt other people.
The ninth step, the making of amends, is really where I begin to rebuild my relationship with others. Whether I'm going to rebuild a relationship with somebody and continue that relationship, or whether the relationship is over and may go nowhere, I still need to close the door and own where I have been wrong and clean my side of the slate, as someone else has already shared. It's where I get right, in a sense, with myself. And I really believe that I make amends for me, not necessarily for you. And that as long as I'm making amends for me, then it's about my process and my program of recovery and my way of growing spiritually, that when I make amends for you, then I give away the power of God to you. And you have the ability to affect my well-being and how you respond. I can take the ninth step to an extreme in not knowing, not being raised with boundaries as a child and not quite knowing what is appropriate or inappropriate. I can take this step to an extreme and really hurt others with my honesty and in my amends. And it's important for me to go to a sponsor or to other people to find out what I need to make amends for, first of all, and then how to go about doing that, and whether I should in certain circumstances or shouldn't in certain circumstances. And at times it seemed the best of all possible solutions to make amends by writing a letter, or to not make amends at all because it may really harm another person, or by going to them, which for me is the most fearful, but by going to them and meeting with them face to face and saying, I'm sorry for what I've done. But it's been helpful to have other people teach me how to discern what I need to do with my life and how I need to write my life. My best thinking didn't work, and so other people can teach me in a more effective way. People have been down that path a little bit farther than I have.
When I did make amends to people, when I went into step 9 and started making amends, and some people, there were letters that I wrote and they were received real well. And then there were some people that I made amends to and they went, what are you talking about? And I had to remember that I was doing this for me. I wasn't doing this for them. I needed to get back into my own value system. And in order to be in my value system, I needed to make these amends to these people. Because it was real inappropriate behavior that I did. And until I had gone through the process of making amends, the feelings that I was having about myself and my own inappropriate behavior kept getting stronger and stronger, and my guilt and shame kept getting stronger. And what happened for me after doing those two steps is I was able to let go of a lot of that. And again, realized that I'm human, that I'm going to make mistakes, and that's okay, that the program gives me tools and how to deal with those mistakes. And I'm real grateful for that. I remember when I first started looking at the eighth and ninth step, a lot of old historical feelings came up because it wasn't okay for me to be honest about my behaviors. Because for me to be honest about my behaviors when I was a child made sure that I was going to get got real good. And I kept thinking that was going to take place again. And I had a lot of fear. The fear of being shamed one more time. And somebody started talking to me about my expectations in those steps. And that as long as I keep out expectations of how the people who were receiving those amends were supposed to act, that I didn't have to worry about that taking place. That when I had expectations and expected people to really receive my amends well and go, oh, that's okay, and we forgive you and all that kind of stuff, that at that time I didn't have any boundaries and that shame would come right in and I'd feel that all over again. So that helped me a lot, keeping the expectations out of it. And plus, when I do that for myself, it keeps me out of being in that martyr role. Because when I have expectations, I get into the martyr role, and then I get mad because people weren't nice to me. It's a whole cycle there.
The 10th step to me is, and it's really self-explanatory, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. What I do personally is every night before I go to bed, I will run through my mind what that day was like. Have I injured someone? Have I done something that I should talk to somebody about immediately? Do I owe somebody an amends? I mean, have I either inadvertently or advertently harmed someone, and myself is included in this, that where an amends is should be made?
I have to constantly be aware of what's going on in my world. I don't have to analyze it. I just have to be aware that it's there. And when it's not comfortable, I know it today. I don't have any addictions. I choose to call them fixes to take those feelings away. And when I get into not feeling real comfortable, I'll watch how I try to get rid of it by eating or going and drinking 14 cups of coffee or anything, you know, or working too hard. And I know that I'm in some place that I'm not comfortable. And it's usually because I've said something to somebody and not given any thought to it before I said it, or something that simple sometimes, or right down to, I still manipulate situations because I don't know how not to do that all the time. I do it so subconsciously at times that it just happens, and then all of a sudden I'm aware that it's happening. But at least today, the gift is that I can see that awareness. I feel it. And that's what makes me sit down and finally make myself comfortable by working these steps again, especially on step number 10. That's the one that gets rid of it right away.
The 10th, 11th, and 12th steps to me are the maintenance steps, and they really encompass the spirit and the principles of steps 1 through 9. Many people talk about working the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps on a daily basis, some more often, some less often. And I've never really looked at how often I do them, but I know that I do them regularly. Taking a personal inventory is not generally a conscious step that I do every day. And when I get real lazy, I tend to take a personal inventory once things get crazy. And then I'll take a personal inventory and go, oh, okay, well, here's where I've been wrong. I better go back and make it right, instead of checking my behavior and my feelings and my responses on a daily basis. It's one that I have to discipline myself to work on a regular basis, or I forget and I become lax and I go back and wait till somebody gets hurt, or I do something that is offensive to another person, or I harm another person, or say something that may hurt somebody. But I'm more willing today than I've ever been, with the healing that comes out of this program, to make amends and promptly admit when I'm wrong. I am very grateful for that, because I was either the worst of the worst or the best of the best throughout most of my life, usually the worst of the worst. So to make amends really was like admitting that I am this terrible no-good person, which does come out of my shame. And it tells me today that the amount of shame that I'm dealing with today is much less than it ever has been before. And that's directly due to working this program. And I can say I'm wrong, I can admit that I'm fallible, and that I'm not perfect, and I don't have to be. And this step reinforces it on a regular basis for me.
Step 10, as Kim was saying a few minutes ago, 10 and 11 and 12 are maintenance steps. And step 10 for me is the real lifesaver, because it gives me a step that I can work on a daily basis if I choose to do that, or more. There's been some days where I've worked that step more than one time, especially if I'm into a lot of feelings going on and I'm not dealing with them appropriately. I tend to offend a lot of people. And there's been days when I've been real offensive over and over again. And the key for me on that one is when I make my amends. The other half of that for me is my responsibility to do whatever I need to do so that I don't do that again. And that if I'm raging at somebody and being offensive that way, that I need to go back and work the steps on my rage and find out why I'm doing that and do whatever I can do to change that behavior. That's the other half of it for me, because I was real good at thinking that I was just the worst of the worst person and saying I'm sorry a lot. And all that did was put Band-Aids on. So it's been helpful for me to do the other half of that, because it's made it to where it's longer lasting and that I don't get into those behaviors as much.
The 11th step talks about prayer and meditation. I believe prayer is talking to God, and I believe meditation is listening. The way it was suggested to me is this step is done twice daily. It's done a.m. and p.m. In the a.m. we ask God for knowledge of His will for me today and the power to carry that out. We ask for a thought. We ask for intuition that day. We ask that self-will be removed from us. We ask God that He guide us and He take care of us through that day. And for whatever His will is this day, we ask God for that power. I have a belief today, if God's power is not involved in it, I will have an inability to do that. God gives me all power today. As far as prayer is concerned, you know, I believe if you go through ritualistic prayers, that's fine. And as far as meditation is concerned, I believe if you go through some sort of ritualistic meditation, that's fine. But I think the longer that I've been involved in the 11th step, the shorter my prayers have become. The basis, I believe, of all the steps that we've talked about up until now comes to the full realization of God's power for me and God's will for me, and being able to stay in humility and being able to let God guide my life, take care of me, and move me on to things that I never thought that I'd be doing. The step also talks about conscious contact with God. I know the first time I heard that, it eluded me. It was what it was talking about was God actually talking to me, God actually telling me to do something or not to do something. I found that the longer that I've stayed in the steps and that the longer that I have followed God, the more that I can hear His messages. And sometimes they're very, very clear. Most of the time I hear God's messages through other people, and what I think that is about is regular attendance at meetings. Sometimes I hear His messages in places that I'd never expect to hear His messages.
Number 11, prayer and meditation, was totally foreign to me. I didn't know how to contact God. I didn't understand Him or anything else. And when I got to step 11 the first time, I did not know how to pray and meditate the way that it made me feel comfortable. I only knew how to pray when I was out there in my other world, as I call it, to ask for things for myself, to always be screaming, to help me, you know, all those kind of things. Today, I have learned to pray for other people. I never pray for myself. I turn things over, but I don't pray for myself. Because what I have found is if I'm asking for something for someone else, it usually comes back to me 10 times over. And I didn't know how to do that before. I used to pray for other people in a not a very nice way. Learning how to pray for somebody I didn't like was something different too, to pray for them and ask that they may have all the good I would wish for myself was a real difficult thing for me to do. It is not so much anymore. And what I have found after I pray and I meditate and I address those kind of issues, that after a while I get so that I'm not so obsessed on the issue, and it kind of takes care of itself. And praying for that knowledge of watching God work in my life, it puts me in a gray area. Nothing's black and white anymore. Being a good codependent, I like to be conscious at all times of what's going on in my world, and I want you to spell it out and tell me what I'm going to get into if I ask you for something. And living in a gray area and just watching my world unfold is a real different place for me to live. It's actually becoming fun, though, today. It's fascinating to be aware of what goes on in my world and to just watch it all be put there. People, places, and things get put in my path that there's no way I could set that up. Incidents happen all the time. Last night one happened where the lady made a statement, just look what God did, set us up together here to help someone else. And neither one of us knew each other before that. That's what it means to me, is just letting God carry out His will, not only for me, but the people that are involved in the situation with me.
The 11th step is, like the third step, a keystone in my recovery. I'm real impressed with the 11th step from the standpoint that it talks about seeking through prayer, conscious contact with God as we understand Him, and praying only for knowledge of His will for us and power to carry that out. I don't pray for money. I don't pray necessarily. I don't pray for a better job. I don't pray for any of these sorts of things, because what that does for me is I start stamping my own self-will on my prayers. God, give me this and I'll be happy. And what my disease has taught me is that if I get what I want, I'll end up self-destructing. God knows what's best for me. And when I can let go of my own desires, let go of self-will, let go of my own ego, to the point where I can say, God, if you want it for me, I know it's the best. I seek your will and that alone. Then I'm on the right road, as opposed to the road to destruction that I was on prior to recovery. What the 11th step requires of me is living one day at a time, is to look not 5 days ahead or 5 years ahead, but looking at today only and concentrating on the next step, whatever that might be. And sometimes my spirituality is reduced to something so simple as to make a phone call, or run an errand, go to the store, or pick up a piece of paper off the floor, or go in and spend some time with my children. Just understanding and being in God's will on an ongoing basis. Now that's not possible for me by myself. I can't do that on my own will. I can't do what I'm supposed to do all the time. Only God can supply that power. Believe me, I've tried my whole life and it simply wasn't possible. It's only through God's power that I am able to take some of these steps. Small, simple things, they may seem, but they were impossible for me before. It's through the 11th step that I gain knowledge of His will and power to carry that out, and I can concentrate on today. You know, no matter how much I project about the future, whatever I project is generally wrong, and even about the past, that's usually, I've got that confused as to what my past is about sometimes. All I have is today, and if I pray to God today to give me knowledge of His will and power to carry that out, then my day is okay. It's only when I start getting into projecting or beating myself about the past that things start going down the chute, so to speak.
all of this for me leads up to the 12th step, which talks about a spiritual awakening.
Step 11 has been something that's been probably, to me, a very intimate and special experience. Although I've been extremely codependent with God, too, and in my praying, what I've noticed is a regular pattern of increasing prayer, that I add more and more and more to my prayers, and then all of a sudden I'm frustrated because in the morning and the evening I got an hour and a half's worth of praying to do before I go to bed, and oh God, don't forget that, and oh, don't forget that, and don't forget this. And in my codependency, I wouldn't want to think this, but it's true, that I believe in some ways I have the power to control and influence God's power. And if I pray about this, God will do it, and I'll get somehow God to fix and heal or go and do and whatever it is I'm praying about. So it's difficult for me to let go of being God and having the power to control God through prayer and just pray for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. That's still a fearful thing to me. To keep it that simple tells me that I still believe in some ways that God may not know or remember that this is going on in my life and will look at this or that. And I know that's the child part of me, but I really believe that it's true. And I have to remind God. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm just trying to remind you. And it's like every time I do that, I have to go, okay, here we go, back at it again. I'm in control, and my life's unmanageable, and I'm trying to get God to fix for me what I can't fix for myself, you know. So turning that over and really letting go of attempts to try to control God and deal with the fear that lies behind my need to try to control God has been a wonderful gift from this program. Just learning how to just be peacefully.
I had some difficulties when I first started doing the steps because the God that I had was one that was going to be there for everybody else and was not going to be there for me. And I had to go back and find out that the personality that I gave to God from childhood on up was the same personality that I had with my major caregivers. And that I had to start separating that out and trusting that there was a God that was going to be there for me. And I did a lot of that through the 11th step. I did part of that in the first three steps, and then with steps 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, that helped me to improve my trust with God. But the 11th step helped me to really see God as I understood God and not how anybody else understood God. And that was okay, and that I didn't have to have the same God as everybody else. And praying for a knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out, that kept the program real simple for me. I get into thinking a lot and intellectualizing, and in my prayers I would get into that, and I would get into codependency just in those, and either praying for myself, and then in my mind I'd be going, well, if I pray for this, then this and this and this might happen, or this and this and this might happen. And so I better not pray for that one. And then if I'd pray for something for somebody else, then I'd get into the same thing. Well, this might happen for them or that might happen for them, so I better not do that. And I'd go through all this thinking when all I needed to do was to be quiet and listen to God and simply pray for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out and to keep it that simple. I'm real grateful that step has that in there. That helps, that plays right along with me with the serenity prayer and accepting the things that I cannot change. And I cannot change anybody else. And all I can do is work on myself. And so I need to just pray for God to reveal to me what it is I'm supposed to do today. And I liked what Jim was saying about that keeps me in one day at a time. And it keeps me out of projection, and it keeps me out of my past. And it helps me to just work on what's before me today.
Step 12 talks about a spiritual awakening. It's one of the main little couple words in there, spiritual awakening. The only way I believe that I came to this spiritual awakening was by working the 11 steps that came before step 12. I try to carry at all times this message to other codependents. And the miracle about carrying the message to codependents is the more I can talk about codependency, the more I can help a newcomer coming into the program, the less that I'm in my own disease. Practicing these principles in all our affairs, you know, I also believe this is a lifetime practice. Myself, personally, I didn't work the steps one time and arrive at a spiritual awakening and understand all the principles all at once and have this wonderful relationship with God all at once. It was a continual practice and practice and practice. I had to learn what the principles were. I had to learn about faith. I had to learn about hope. I had to learn about humility. And even more difficult was carrying this into all my affairs. It's real easy for me to sit in a CODA meeting and talk about the principles, and it's real easy to sit in a CODA meeting and feel humility, but the difficult thing for me is to carrying these principles into my work and carrying these principles into my friendships and into my relationships. Having the heartfelt knowledge that God is taking me where I'm supposed to go, and that as I'm sitting here right now taping this, that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And it has been this way in the past, it's this way now, and with the faith that I've gotten from these steps, I'm positive it will be there in the future.
Spirituality is a very precious thing to me. I don't confuse it with religion at all. When I got to recovery, I had a very condemning God, and religion was something that was pounced down on me all the time. I was terrified of it, and I had a lot of issues to deal with. Today, spirituality has a much different meaning. It's a connection to an energy that I really can't see, but I can feel. Having that connection is what keeps me in recovery. I honestly believe and feel that if I did not have that connection to that universal power, I would not be able to stay in recovery. I would have to use something to make me feel the way I used to feel. I don't do that anymore. When I bring it outside and I take it to other people, once I describe that as the high I had always been looking for. I took drugs and alcohol and I used other addictions to make me feel this utopia, and I never could find it. And when I work with other people, it gives me that high that I couldn't find. I don't know how to describe that, except it's just a feeling that just is all through my body when it happens, and it's such a connection, it's just unbelievable. And so that brings it down to practicing these principles in all my affairs. It has become a way of life for me. I choose that way of life. It makes me comfortable, it gives me a direction, I have some centeredness, and I am taken care of. And I am slowly learning to believe, to trust God, and to trust the other people He puts in my world. And I honestly believe we're all on this journey together, helping each other to go home.
All of this for me leads up to the 12th step, which talks about a spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening really for me starts at the first step, when I admit that I'm powerless, that my life is unmanageable, and continues to grow as I practice these steps. More is revealed to me. I understand more about my history, about my codependent issues, about this shame that I received, about dealing with feelings. As time goes on, I begin to understand my world a little bit better with God's guidance. And that's what the spiritual awakening means for me. It's like moving off of one plane of living onto another plane of living entirely. Whereas before, my life was filled with fear, and it was filled with controlling people, places, and things, and trying to turn over a new leaf and be a better person. Now, it's beginning to change to the point where I understand things from a spiritual slant, which is an altogether different slant than I lived in before. A natural outgrowth of that spiritual awakening is to be willing to carry the message to other people, to do things like sit down and do a taping, sharing things on tape, to be willing to talk to someone that I meet in my daily life about what my history was like and the answers that I found in Codependence Anonymous and the 12 steps of Codependence Anonymous.
there are a lot of ways to carry the message to other codependents, and all I need to do is be willing and open to see those opportunities. The last part of that 12th step is, again, the one that I will be practicing, hopefully, for the rest of my life, and that is carrying these principles into all of my affairs, because there is so much here in these 12 steps. I'm the kind of person that I want to get somewhere. I want there to be a destination or a goal. I want to arrive. And what I'm beginning to understand through the 12 steps of Codependence Anonymous is that the goal isn't important. It's the process. It's understanding on a daily basis, a moment-by-moment basis, that taking the knowledge that I receive from these 12 steps and using them and practicing them. And I'll never be able to do that perfectly, but I hope to do it better. I know that I'm doing it better today than when I first came into recovery, and this program has given me the kind of hope to know that tomorrow, if I continue to work these steps, continue to go to meetings, continue to do the things that are suggested, tomorrow will be even better. And that's how I hope to live my life.
Just learning how to just be peacefully, although that's not an ongoing thing, but just experiencing that periodically has been part of what I understand my own spiritual awakening to be. I've always thought that spiritual awakenings, you know, were thunder clapping and light flashing and booming and, you know, somebody appearing in my living room and the burning bush effect and all that sort of stuff. And in looking at my own working of this program, and especially this step, spiritual awakening to me has been a real gradual process. And that oftentimes I don't even notice that it's happening until I sit down and talk with somebody, or I share at a session like this, or I'm in a CODA meeting and I hear something that says, oh yeah, look at how far you've come or how much you've changed. And then I truly have that sense of gratitude about the awakening that God is doing within me and within other people and within this program. In some ways, spiritual awakenings to me are the acknowledging of God's miracles in my life. Sometimes I have to get slapped pretty hard upside the head with a spiritual awakening to recognize it, but most times today it's a very slow and gradual effect. And oftentimes it comes out of the pain and the fear of my past and the working through of the pain and fear of my past, and is like a byproduct and a result of working the steps and the principles in this program. And the greatest gift to me is the opportunity to carry this message to other codependents. I think without that, in some ways I don't know that I'd want to work recovery very often. The opportunity and the gift to be able to give it away has been incredible. And my gratitude I think is a shallow word to describe how I feel about that. It's a real special, special gift, which I do pray about regularly and I meditate about regularly, how I might be able to do that in a greater way, in a more effective way. In God's way, He keeps showing me how to do that. It's a real blessing. The last part of the 12th step, to practice these principles in all of our affairs, really brings me back to step one, and it completes the circle. And that invariably I get in touch with practicing these principles in all of my affairs when a certain person or a certain place or a certain situation or a certain thing affects my well-being at any given moment, to where a minute ago I was fine and now I am nuts. And it's like, and it is very clearly saying that right now I am powerless over this person, place, situation, or thing, and my life has become unmanageable. That person, place, or thing has the ability to affect my well-being at this moment, and that I am somehow connected or hooked in again, which really means that I must practice these principles in all my affairs now, especially this particular affair, and admit I'm powerless, and that and my life has become unmanageable, and then go to the second step again and say, and know and truly believe that God can restore me to sanity, risk believing that God can restore me to sanity, and to make a decision to turn the situation, person, place, or thing, which is a part of my life, over to the care of God as I understand God. And if I need to, work a fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh steps and eighth and ninth steps. Which brings me around again to the 12th step and practicing these principles in all my affairs. It's an ongoing cycle, an endless cycle, that seems for me to affect and be a powerful part of every aspect of my life. I don't know how to, today, how to only work the steps in this part of my life, but not over here in this part of my life. It doesn't make sense to me anymore. And I used to think I had to work this program and then go out the door after the meeting and live out there in the real world. And then I come back in here and I work this program. And today I believe that there is no spiritual part. That is, it is a spiritual walk and a spiritual program, and that these are suggested steps that we take to continue growing in recovery and becoming closer to our higher power and building that intimate relationship and healing the person that we are inside so that we can be with other people in a loving and caring way. And that all this is really about learning how to love and be loved.
When I got to that step and I started looking back at what had happened to me in the first 11 steps, I was filled with a lot of gratitude, and I had no doubts at that point that there was a higher power in my life and that God was working in my life. And to me, that was my spiritual awakening, along with my recognition and knowledge that I had an inner child inside of me. Because what I came to find out for myself is that my child carried my belief in God, and that my child had no doubt that there was a God. And that what happened is I took all that information from that I received from my childhood and pretended like there wasn't a God there for me. So my spiritual awakening for me had to do with God and with my inner child. I pray a lot and meditate a lot through my child, because that keeps me out of the garbage for myself. When I get into my head and trying to figure out what's best for me and what's best for this world, I'm into that computer adult part of me, and I need to stay in the child and keep it simple and try and follow God's will to the best of my ability. And that's part of the practicing these principles in all our affairs. There isn't one area of my life that I can't work the steps on. And when those areas are causing me problems, I need to go back to the steps and start working the steps so that I can have some freedom. Because bottom line for me, that's what I've received out of the 12 steps, is a true freedom. And I didn't know what that was before. And there was also a key for me in that practicing the principles in all our affairs, is that it reminds me that I need all of you in this program for me to recover. And I can't do this on my own. All the steps talk about we or our, or it all includes all of us. And without all the other members of CODA, I'm not going to be able to recover, because I do need you. And that's a real step for me. I'm grateful for these steps. And like Ken was saying, that when I finish with number 12, it takes me right back up to the first step. And I also am grateful for the wisdom of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous for originating these steps, and that they were able to listen to God's wisdom, and they were able to carry that out and to write these steps. So my gratitude goes back to that program for the wisdom in each one of these steps, and the wisdom that is shown in the 12 traditions that go right along with these steps.
Codependence Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women whose common purpose is to develop healthy relationships. It is not affiliated with any other 12-step program. The 12 Steps of Codependence Anonymous are adapted with permission of Alcoholics Anonymous World Services, Incorporated.